What is up, you guys? Welcome back to the Sunset Drive podcast for a brand new episode. I am Anthony Smith, and on this side of the internet, I like to have old and new friends from the entertainment industry come on, talk about their career, share some stories, share some laughs. So if that sounds like a sweet time to you, then you might want to keep listening. You might know today's guest as a serpent from Riverdale. You might know him as your local bartender, or even as this amazing photographer based in Vancouver. But most of you know him as Bobby on Julian the Phantoms. Everyone, welcome to The Drive, Taylor Carre. How's it going?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Quick mental health checkup. How are we doing? Like quarantine?
I'm not going crazy yet, but we'll see. I mean, it's one of those things where you got to take it day by day. You just got to see what happens.
Got to try. Yeah,
I've been surviving off of rice crackers lately because that's what I don't know why I've been really addicted to rice crackers.
I have these
bags right here just waiting for me to.
Not right. See, I'm like more McDonald's. You're over here with your rice crackers. See?
Yeah. I don't know. They're just so crunchy. And I've been into it.
Do you put anything on top of them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I put things on top of it.
I'll make
peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I'll put like some cheese and some like really fancy jam or something like that.
Come on, preserves.
A little preserves. Some compote or something like that. I made like a bruschetta kind of thing. Put a little bit of olive oil, basil, tomato, a little red onion. Yeah, it's good.
Are you a foodie?
Yeah.
Yeah, same. See, yeah. We're already bonding. See, this is already going great. Already going great.
What's your go-to?
In terms of food?
Well, you tried... you don't know what to get, you're just like, that's what I'm going for.
Pasta is always a go-to to me. Because how can you F up pasta? You can't.
It's true, yeah.
Or poutine. But that's because you guys have poutine in Vancouver.
It's not nearly as good as what I've heard. Apparently, I'm not sure. I've had it obviously here, but I've never actually been to Quebec, so I'm not sure what.
You have to come over. You know, we'll go out, grab some poutine. It's a good time.
That sounds great. Yeah, I'd love to come.
So you play Bobby on Julian the Phantoms, and I watched the show and I was like, oh, cute. Like Bobby, you know, has a bigger storyline in the grand scheme of things. If you guys have watched it, you know. If you haven't watched it, then. That's embarrassing for you. Yeah. Why you got to do it like that? You know what I mean? Yeah.
What's going on?
It sucks. But yeah, you play Bobby on the show, which I think like people forget, like in the grand scheme of things, your character will begin to have a bigger part if the show progresses the way that it is, because flashback sequences, all that stuff, your character will come back. It has to, you know?
It's a pretty integral part of the 90s whenever they go back.
Exactly. And I know they said in interviews they want to go back to like, oh, when they were, you know, when Alex came out, when like they were all dealing with their family stuff. Yeah. So
there's so much of that stuff that they could easily jump into at any given moment.
Exactly. Now, my thing is, and this is where like, Taylor, I got you. I see people simping over Charlie. Okay, great. All right. I see people simping over Owen. Okay, great.
I understand.
We get it. Jeremy, 100%. But let's get on the Taylor train. You know what I'm saying? So like,
you know what? I have a very dedicated and loving fan group that are very pro that. Oh yeah, they're very aggressively. They'll tag me in TikToks. They'll have big groups of it, and you know, fan groups and stuff. Which I'm like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, but
there are some people who are very passionately for me, and I'm sure that it kind of seems intimidating for people coming in.
Yeah, because they're like, no, but it's great. But now my goal is, I want after the end of this interview, people be like, I'm on the Taylor train now.
Well, I mean, I love that, but like, also the guys are great.
They're so great too. I remember
when I met Owen, I had the same idea. I was like, wow, you're dope.
He's a really cool dude. How like entirely a really really great cast. But yeah, I want people to get more into Taylor, get to know you a little bit better before you were on the show, because like it's a very small part of like in the grand scheme of things, your entire career and your entire timeline.
Totally.
Now, you're really into mixology. I want to know how you got into that, because I bartended and
did you?
I followed recipes, you know? Oh, like half a, okay, cool. And I put it in there. Mm-hmm. But mixology is really much an art form, I think, in creating flavors and in creating original drinks. How did you get into it? Like, how did it happen?
I think it really happened. So I started doing something illegal when I was very young, which was pretend, like, figuring out how to make drinks. So I think I started, like, mixing around with drinks when I was 13. And I remember it was very, I lived in Alberta at the time.
Okay.
And I, there's nothing to do there. Right. So what I did is I would get it, and then I would look up recipes online and just kind of mess around with that. But then later, I kind of was like, I got bored of it. I'm like, okay, what can I actually do? And then
yeah,
I started a restaurant, I think when I was 18.
Okay.
And then I was like, I want to work at the bar. That's my goal.
Go to, yeah.
So I did that, and I got in somehow. They liked it enough. And then I just kept on working at it, and I was going to competitions, and I was kind of experimenting and meeting a lot of the really good bartenders in the areas, and
mm-hmm.
And just trying to figure out what I liked too. And then because I am so into food, I decided, yo, I like this a lot. And what if I bring some of the things, when you like have a really good dessert at a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
you'd be like, what, why did that taste so good together? So I remember one of my favorite drinks that I made, it's called Rosa Blanca. It's a mezcal drink that I had at this Mexican restaurant.
Ooh.
But it was inspired by that. So basically it was a white chocolate, grapefruit, strawberry and, or a green strawberry.
Okay.
And like with kind of some Hispanic kind of flavors to it.
Okay.
It's phenomenal, and I still love it to this day, but it's one of my favorite drinks. It's just like a dessert cocktail.
Yum. I've only had the basic stuff, you know,
like, and I mean, that's the thing. And I think those are great. Those are fantastic. Go-tos, and they're really good starting points. And I think it's very easy to get accessible drinks that taste good.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I think there's a certain level of pretension that happens within the industry. Like any, it's the same thing that happens in chefs and stuff. They start making these really unapproachable drinks and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. There's a place for that.
Right.
But it's also not for everybody.
I feel that. No, I watched a couple of your videos, and I was just like, I thought it was good. I don't anymore. All right. I don't anymore. That was embarrassing. But I always try to find cool ways to bring my guest's uniqueness to the show. So I asked you something I've never asked before of my guests on the podcast. I was like, can you make a drink inspired by Julien the Phantoms? Now, I don't think I've heard of a podcast that does drinks on their podcast, but there's a first for everything, you know? So
there is.
You made a recipe, and we're going to do it right now on the show, and hopefully I don't spill all over my computer, and hopefully you don't either.
I kind of have a little workstation here that's going to be set up.
All right, let me get my gear, because mine is like in the back. So
yeah, I see that.
Let me preface this by saying it's probably not going to be as cute as yours.
You know what? You never know. You might surprise yourself. It'll be fine.
So, see, you got some skills. I don't do that. I just put it in.
Okay, so what we're going to do first then is you're just going to put the raspberries inside your rocks glass.
Yes, I did that. And I muddled it with I muddled it with my simple syrup already, just because I didn't want to make it too hard on myself. And I also got some simple syrup. It's keto. I'm not sure if there's a difference. That's just what I could find at the store.
Yeah, I mean, simple syrup's just sugar and water, but you can.
This is
you can do whatever.
Monk fruit, whatever that's that
monk
is.
Okay, monk fruit. It's like an artificial sweetener. It's used a lot in artificial sweeteners.
Great.
So I'm just going to throw that in there like that. I'm gonna do a little bit less, but I think I put 0.75 for simple syrup.
Okay.
But you can kind of adjust that for sweetness as you like, because things are way too sweet, and I don't like things that sweet. I'm going to muddle this with the back of the knife. Don't do this at home, because this is dangerous.
Yeah, you could cut yourself. And by the way, you
could easily cut yourself.
Taylor is so great. He made sure if you're underage, you could get a drink. If you're watching the show and you're still not over Netflix, not having renewed it yet, you can have this drink to ease the pain. You know, versatile.
It's a versatile drink.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm going to do there is I'm going to throw the ice inside this cup first. Just let it chill out there. It's good to give it a stir so it has like it separates a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. I got some ice.
You got some ice?
Yeah.
Cool. I'm just going to stir this up real quick just to...
Yeah. Okay. Got it going.
I have a fancy stir stick, so...
Yeah. You got the good stuff. I got the ratchet stuff. It's okay.
Do you have a shaker tin there?
I don't have a shaker because we broke ours literally 2 days ago. But what I do have is a solo cup and a glass.
That works. That works great.
Right?
So you're going to do 1.5 ounces of the rum.
Right here.
Nice.
Right.
A little Bacardi.
Yeah, the basic stuff.
The basics.
The basics.
We love it. We love to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's a little bit fancier, but that's just because I don't have...
Ooh, drop the names. I like names. What's the name?
This is Mastrulum, which is a Cuban rum.
Okay, Cuban. Yes.
It's a nice Blanco rum. Okay. And then I'm going to do 1/2 ounce of this triple sec, but this is Pierre Ferrand, which is like a really fancy one that's like way more expensive, but
come on, triple
that's
sec.
Just me. That's just me clout chasing, you know?
So. I love a good clout chase. If you're out there and you want to sponsor the podcast, let me know. Let me know.
After that, I'm going to add 1/2 ounce of lime juice.
Yes. By the way, guys, I already pre-made my mixture, so I'm just letting Taylor take it away with his.
Oh, you did? Okay. I was wondering. I feel like... Okay. So I just squeezed it in there with one of these bad boys.
Right.
And then I'm adding this pineapple juice. The fun thing about pineapple juice, you can tell if it's real pineapple juice if it foams up when you shake it.
Oh, mine did foam up. Like, it's a little bit gone, obviously, because I shook it up a little bit earlier, but it's there.
And I'm just going to add, like, a little tiny bit of this vanilla. You can add as much as you want, really, but vanilla is a pretty strong flavor, so...
It is. But the fragrance is beautiful.
I'm just adding, like, a little tiny drop.
Okay.
So I'm just going to shake this bad boy.
Okay. I know you did cool. Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to shake it with ice.
See? Okay.
All right.
Wow, that was cool.
Little drippage. So like, whoops, I'm dripping it everywhere. But it kind of looks
okay.
Like that.
Cute. Okay, let me pour mine in. Okay, so I pour it in there.
So I'm going to do this thing with this lime peel to make the garnish.
Okay. This is what I got going on right now.
Ooh, yeah. That looks nice.
I'm a bartender, y'all. Be careful putting that on the resume.
Put it on the resume.
My garnish is sad. I took a peeler, and I just took the peel, and I did a little ghost face.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, too. And I'm doing a really bad job of it. You actually did better than me.
That's not true.
So you got it.
That's not true.
No, you did, because I did a really bad job of that.
Okay.
But I'm just going to throw it on the edge of it, of the glass. Just hang out in the drink, you know?
Good.
Just throw it on top or whatever, yeah?
Then cheers.
Salute. And there we go.
That's lovely.
Nice little tropical drink.
Mm. See, is it bad if I keep sipping this while we record this?
No.
Will you?
I think I would be offended. You didn't.
Ooh, when you bring the straw in there, you really get that bitterness of the raspberry. That's lovely.
Yeah, you should really stir it up when you're doing it, just because it like incorporates all the flavors. But it's just like the presentation when you first get it is like a nice sunset and stuff. So
if we have raspberry seeds in our teeth, don't let us know. Honestly, we don't want to
know. I would love,
know.
Yeah. You know what? It's kind of like an Easter egg. Can you spot the raspberry seeds? Give us the timestamps, please.
Not people zooming in on the video trying to see. See, yours is all foamy and beautiful. Mine looks like... Now that we have our little drinks, we're ready to get into the gig, you know. So, you know, tell me about a little bit of your upbringing. One of my favorite things about you is that you're very versatile. And that's something that I value a lot. I think as a creative... Not limiting yourself to one creative outlet. You know, you did theater and acting, photography, mixology, music. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you, first of all, we'll start with acting because there's a lot to unpack here. How did you translate from theater performing to acting? And what's the pros and cons of each industry? Because I know, like, a lot of the people who act these days are people who did theater back in the day. So what are the pros and cons of those industries that you found yourself to notice?
Late night?
Yeah.
Well, one more year and you'll make junior.
Tired.
You know, your dad wanted this for you. It's your choice, hon.
I think the biggest thing that changed is the whole vibe, because a film set runs so much differently
production.
Than a theater does. Mm-hmm. And the work ethic of everything is very different and stuff in the way that you do it. Mm-hmm. I did mainly musical theater. So also the idea that you actually had to sing and dance and stuff, and your rehearsal time with that is a lot faster, right. I guess.
Yeah.
You're trying to, I mean, we got a lot of it in Julian the Phantom too, where it's like, you're there and you're rehearsing.
Yeah.
It's fast paced, but there's a lot of similarities, but most times when you're working in film, you don't get that. There's nothing like that at all.
Right.
It's just very different.
And I heard you also mention money, which I think could not be more true, especially now with COVID, that literally every theater production right now is shut down.
And they're trying to do like this virtual theater thing with a lot of people on Zoom. And I know I had some friends that did it,
mm-hmm.
especially during quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's money is a big part of it, because you definitely make way more of it.
Acting.
Yeah. Film and TV. So
I feel that. And like I said, we talk about versatility. You do acting, you do all this stuff. How does it, because I also value versatility. I'm a graphic designer, I'm a creative director, I'm an actor, I do music.
That's awesome.
And then I do the podcast here. So I juggle a bunch of stuff. How do you juggle all of that? And what does like a week look like for you?
A week looks pretty hectic. It kind of really depends on the week though, because I find that for me, I can only really focus strongly on 2 to 3 things.
Right.
So like if I'm not trying to make headway in one thing, then mm-hmm. I'm trying to make headway in another thing. So lately I've been very focused on making the EP, which has been my primary kind of like, what I've been working on it. That's all I've been working on for like the last week.
Mm-hmm.
And then besides that, I would say like my other thing right now, my camera actually broke pretty recently, like a couple, maybe
isn't
like
that,
a week and a bit ago.
Nifty.
It's nifty. It's really nifty, but it also made it so I just have to work on other things. So
Right. You juggle, and right now you're focusing on music. What can people expect about the music?
It's all over the place. I wouldn't say it's very much what, I guess you could kind of guess what it would sound like just because of the stuff that I have covered and stuff like that.
Frank Ocean vibes. I see you.
There's a bit of that. There's mm-hmm. a bit of like that indie R&B kind of feel to it.
Love that.
I'm not nearly as good of a vocalist as Frank is. Let's be real.
Don't sell yourself short. Taylor, let's not do that.
I know that I need to work on it, which is fine.
That's okay. Yeah.
Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with having a place to go.
Right. No, for sure.
So
for sure.
It's, I think the thing is going to be like how sonically all the songs sound very different, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be an interesting thing.
And like your photography, I love photography. I did 1 year of graphic design school, so definitely love photography. Yeah. What do you like most about it? Because you're really incredibly talented. Portraits. Do you do like headshots?
So I got into photography, well, portrait photography at least, from just being an actor. Because you know so many actors.
Right.
You might as well
get in there.
Headshots.
Yeah.
Hey. So it's like an easy way to just get money when you're an actor.
Absolutely.
But I started doing food because I loved food so much.
You're literally Tori as a guy. Do you know that?
I mean,
you're very similar.
I guess so.
You're very similar.
Yeah, I've heard that. So like,
yeah,
I've heard that.
Yeah, you've heard that from who?
I've just heard that we're similar in ways. Yeah, I mean, I could go. I mean, she's in Vancouver right now, anyway. So
she's in Vancouver. No, just what I mean is like she values versatility a lot, and she's a
foodie. She does. Yeah,
as
she's a very versatile person too, and like.
Yeah, very, not all over the place, but, like, hands-on in everything she does, and I think you're both very similar in that sense, and she's also very much into, like...
She's got a lot of work ethic, and I really respect that about her, like...
Big into food. I want to know, because, like, I have my favorite restaurants in Vancouver, because I was there just a while ago. Tori has her favorite restaurants in Vancouver that she mentioned on the podcast. What are your go-tos?
Pigeon is one.
Pigeon.
Say Mercy is a really good one.
Really? What do they have over there?
It's kind of like, it's Americana meets Italian, like, yeah, it's like Southern Texas Americana meets, like, Italian-American food.
Ooh, comfort food.
it's comfort food, but it's also like they have like this barbecue bolognese that's made like phenomenally, and it's one of the best bolognese I've ever had.
Now let's get back on Julian the Phantoms, because I could talk to you about photography. It's really good. I need to put it away a little bit, because let's make it through the interview. I don't want to.
Let's see what we do.
Yeah, exactly. So you were on Julian the Phantoms. I know that from watching your old interviews, I don't want to ask you the same questions. You basically got the part and they were like, okay, you have 4 days to know your part. You have 4 days to get into the grand scheme of things. Like, what was your experience going into it? Because evidently, like we mentioned prior, your character will probably come back. So, like, do you, like, when you went on set for the first time, like, did you feel the need, I need to bond with these guys to make it feel like we're a band? Or was it more, like, thrown into it, like, go?
I didn't get that much time with the guys prior to it. So it was, like, a really thing where I was like, okay, I have to figure out a way to, like, really to make it feel like that anyway. Obviously, we had the whole day, and we had days prior to it to rehearse and stuff like that. But it, in the grand scheme of things, it's not like, it's like we haven't spent 2 years together, and we haven't had the time for the chemistry and stuff. So it definitely took a lot of that. But like originally, the role wasn't even recurring. So I booked it, and it wasn't a recurring role.
It's gonna have to be. It has to be.
But the thing is, it's like they probably did. I don't know how much of the script they actually wrote at that point.
Right. When they got cast.
So it's one of those things where it's, if you're not written as a recurring, it's like, it's up in the air. I wasn't necessarily coming back. So when I got a call saying that they want me back for Unsaid Emily, then I was like, oh, so I'm actually going to be a part of this.
Yeah. No, because you have to, because like your character is in it grown up. Did you get to hang out with them like once you like finished your days, or did they had to go film other stuff, or did you have the time to like hang out, grab lunch, something like that?
So I came by set a couple times. Everybody, because I live in downtown Vancouver, so everyone, like Paul was staying in my building, Tori was staying in my building.
Really?
Yeah, because I know one of Tori's favorite restaurants is literally a block away from me.
Per se,
yeah. It's a block away from where I live.
I need to try it.
It's good. It's really solid. It's a really good spot.
I need to try that. Okay, so like you did get to like see them a couple of times and like...
Yeah.
Yeah. How was that experience? Because, like, it must have been kind of cool to kind of see, like, you know, most of the time when you have, like, one part or you're here for, like, 1 or 2 days of filming, you're kind of like, I don't know how the show will look like at the end. It's kind of like, I film my stuff
wherever I think it goes, as a day player, it was, like, kind of cool to be able to even, just because I wasn't expecting any sort of, like, family vibes at all.
Because
usually when you get onto a set, it's very much like cold. You're doing your part.
Yeah.
You're doing your part. When you go, you go. Mm-hmm. But they were all very hospitable. Like, I mean, all the people on set were amazing. So, and I actually, Amy, I worked with, like, the costume designer
set.
Yeah, she, I actually worked with her on Lines in Waiting.
Boys, we keep playing like this, we're in the playoffs.
Cheers!
Cheers! Woo! Woo!
All right, boys.
Woo! Now go get him!
Yeah!
Come on!
Get the fuck down, Jesus. Get out of here. Fuck on the ground, pussy.
Hey, you might actually like this.
This is what happens to Rook's voice.
Oh my god, the kid's got a hammer.
So you had some friends there.
She was a costume designer on that, so it was kind of really cool to actually see her to do that. So, I mean, I knew some people either way from the set, so it was cool to just drop by anyway, so it kind of felt more like a community.
Yeah, because there was a lot of crew from Vancouver, assuming that they didn't fly out too many people from California. So I assume there have been a few people that
They actually did. They actually flew out a lot of people from California.
Really?
So that's surprising. I was one of the, just like besides me and Steve Basic, who plays the older version, there aren't that many people on the cast that weren't from LA.
Oh, Steve is from Vancouver as well?
Yeah, he's based here too.
All right. That's cool.
So there aren't that many people that are like actually from Vancouver or actually are based in Vancouver.
But see, now you got the part. So that's all that matters. So I guess like that's something to look forward to like for the next season. I'm sure you're like kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. Because like if the show gets renewed, I get to do a little more on the show.
I would love to. Yeah. And I would absolutely love to do that.
I'm down for it. You know, like some people are speculating like, oh, what if they did a show about the backstory? So like if they did a show about the backstory or like a movie or if they did like a mini series or whatever, you'd have to maybe be like a series regular or something. Like,
yeah, I mean, so there's cool. a lot of opportunity there. It is super cool.
Yeah.
If you ever wanted to go back, I could totally do that. So
that's exciting.
And I'm not getting any older, so
what I'm do you still mean going
out. You're not getting. I'm still any going out for 17-year-olds. So it's fine.
How old are you?
I'm 26.
You're 26. You play a 17-year-old.
I play 17 all the time. I actually just booked an 18-year-old. So
that's you're lucky because see now I'm 20 and people think I'm like 30 and it hurts my feelings. Not gonna lie. So I wish I could still go for roles that are like.
You'll probably stay looking the same age though for a while. So it's.
That's true. That's true.
But like, I don't see you getting older until you probably hit 30 anyway.
Ouch, the big 3-0. I mean, you're closer to it than I am, but you still look like that.
You've got
that,
a long way to go.
So, like, good for you.
It's really weird going out against actual 17-year-olds. I imagine you probably would see the reverse of that if you saw somebody who were much older than you going out for the same role.
That's true. Oh, yeah, that's true. But I
Which also sucks, but it's weird.
You're in the room, you have your own car, then they're like, hey, Mom, I finished my audition. Can you come pick me
up? And that's that never gets easier. You're like, ah. Actually, I remember one time, there was a couple of years ago that I went out for a 14-year-old. I think I was 24 at the time. And Ouch. I went out for a 14-year-old against somebody who I was in my acting class who just turned 18.
Okay.
He just turned 18. And he was a child at that point. Like he was There's no way, and he looked like a child, and I'm like, how am I going out for this? My voice isn't exactly the highest pitched either, so I have to like
Yeah, you have fake a very deep being, voice.
Yeah, so I'm like, I have to fake that I'm going through puberty again.
Oh, like that squeaky vibe with your voice.
It's so weird.
That must have been interesting, and I kind of want to hear that. Could you give me like a little instant?
I don't want anybody to see that tape, but I have friends that will still make fun of me for that tape to this day.
They've seen it. They're like, Taylor, that was not
I rehearsed it with them because I couldn't. Like, oh, it was an in the room audition because they were still doing.
Oh, okay, virtual stuff. That. I see that.
They weren't doing virtual stuff at that point, so I was in there.
Well, that's interesting, because you have a very, very, very deep voice. Like,
It was a weird one to play.
I assume so. And, like, the thing I think is really cool about you joining JTP, like, did you expect going in when you, like, first did, like, your few scenes on the show of, like, getting fan art of you and, like, fan clubs?
Not even a little bit. And it's so crazy and it's so cool. And I'm like, how are you guys so talented?
People are so like, crazy talented.
Everybody that's coming into this, and I'm like, I want to buy your art. Like, how?
There was that coffee thing you posted like yesterday. I was like, huh?
Yeah. And I'm like, how?
I don't understand.
And
how.
There's some really phenomenal artists, and the one that I have in my profile picture, like, who draws me as a Tuxedo Max? That's amazing. I'm like, that's something that I would have dreamed about when I was a kid.
That artist, I love them. Hold on, let me find their name because I need to shout them out. I really, really do. Oh, Sabrina Santiago.
Yeah.
She's phenomenal. Phenomenal. No, she is. Phenomenal. No, the artists are insane. I have to, like, put myself in your shoes where you're just like, oh, you're just chilling, you know, doing what you need to do. And then you check your phone and you're like, huh? Like, this little thing that I did, like, a year and a half ago, you know, is now becoming
really
a lot
overwhelming
of what
people
know me from. I assume so.
Yeah, it's very overwhelming at first. And I remember the first month or something, I wouldn't even check my phone. Like I didn't open Instagram, I think, for like.
Yeah, because the notifications go crazy.
Yeah, and it's just like every single second I refreshed it would be like, you know how it gives you the thing
at
the top?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it'd be like 100, 100, 100. And I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, and they tag you sometimes in things that don't even have to do with you.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay. So it's really hard to look through it still.
Yeah.
Just because it's like. It's constantly there and it's constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great, but it was very overwhelming at first.
I assume so. And I know like because you run businesses as a photographer and a mixologist and like you use social media as a way to get to your potential clients. I assume it must have been hard in the beginning to see like who are people that's interested in like hiring me and like who's interested in like. Is that when you started your photography page, or like was it before?
No, I had a photography page for forever actually, and it was kind of like an issue when I first started doing it because, obviously clients are very different than what you are getting from a fandom. It's a very different clientele.
Yeah.
Because I'm not directly selling to my fans. So it's not really like a thing where they're not my target demographic.
Right, right, right.
But they're still seeing the content and they're still engaging in the content. So it makes it kind of, especially algorithm-wise, it actually makes it a little bit more difficult to get seen on the other side, because it gets put in the same bracket as other Julie and the Phantom stuff.
Right, which is
a very interesting place for that. Which is fine. I mean, a lot of my business side for photography doesn't even have to do with Instagram, actually. So
most
of my stuff, it's all off of that. But it's it was definitely an interesting thing, because I would get tagged in a lot of, on my photography page, it would be like messages, I get tagged in things. I just started deleting the messages and stuff like that.
Yeah, just so you could be like, have a good overlook of what is actually for the business.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I'm not going to respond to anything Julie and the Phantom is based on my photography thing.
Right.
There's no point in me doing that right now. It is a distraction, so it's one of those things where it's like, if I do see it, it doesn't make me want to engage with it anyways, because it's kind of like,
this is not what it's here for.
It's not what it's here for anyways. Yeah. I look at it as like, oh, there's potential business, and then it's not business, and I'm like, no, I'm just ignoring it.
Yeah, because it's so, a turnoff.
You have way less of a chance getting through my DMs, shooting through that way, than you do shooting my regular one.
Yeah, no, I feel that. I could only, because I have a graphic design page, and like, I get the pain I feel when I see like, oh, a new DM, and it's like, can you draw me for free? And it's just like, like, it's just like, it's such a turnoff that you're just like, I don't even want to reply, you know? Like, I feel like what you're saying definitely makes sense.
You must know that, like, that feeling of it is so much different, and like having to separate and compartmentalize different avenues of, because I imagine your graphic design work is going to be completely different than what you do otherwise.
Yeah, no, my business is kind of like, it started very separate, but now it's kind of all merging into one, which is like fun, because like, I do graphic design for YouTubers and influencers, so I'm a creative director for that, so I run their merch and their branding and whatever. So that started there, and because like, I become friends with some of those influencers, I get a following from their followers, and they're super kind, and they're the best, and they're super supportive of what I do. And then I started a podcast, which is like totally separate than what I do there, but then a small part of that comes to the podcast, and they enjoy the content that I make there. So it's all kind of blending into this like thing that I don't even know what to call myself anymore. Like, I'm just a creative at this point.
I think that's the thing. It's like putting the label on it. I've always been like, even for myself, I've been like, yeah, I'm an artist for sure.
Yeah.
There's no way around that, because I can't really peg myself as just like an actor or just as a musician or photographer. I do multimedia art. So.
I totally get that. And do you think, like, as an Asian Canadian in, like, film and TV, because that's a topic that I like to talk about, because, like, I think it's a different experience if you're, like, a white guy going in film and TV might be different than, like, an Asian guy or a Latino guy or a black guy going in film and TV. Mm-hmm. How has your experience been going after parts and, like, going into that realm? And have you sensed a difference? Like, have you sensed, like, okay, something.
There is a difference. There is 100% a difference, just because I always found it a lot. I got really lucky when I started out, and I booked a half a role 6 months out of the gate when I started film acting.
Wow.
I'm super thankful for.
It's the talent for me.
But it is very lucky. But the thing is, I remember when I was first starting and still first going out for everything, I remember I was going out for straight Asian parts and like straight white parts, just like, it's one or the other.
Yeah.
And it was a really hard time, because if I'm going against other white people, I very visibly do not look like another white person.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's one of those things, and not everyone sees it that way, which is fine. That's kind of the plight of being an actor, or being a half Asian actor and stuff like that. But other people do. And it's very, I thought that was actually a very interesting thing with fan art, which is like how people see me against the other people.
Because
some people will see me. I remember I had somebody message me, and they're like, "Isn't that like offensive that they drew you like that?"
Like,
and
I'm like, "No." Asian? Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm like, "No, that's just how they see me."
Mm-hmm. It's all about perspective.
It's the perspective, because if you haven't seen a lot of Asian people in your life, then I look more Asian than the other guys.
Right. To me, like when I first watched the show, I thought you were Latino.
Exactly. So like, some people will think I'm Latino too.
Yeah.
So Which is also because Filipino. We just look...
Right. But it's the versatility.
Yeah.
Because, like, truthfully, when you kind of can pass as multiple ethnicities and backgrounds, you go for different things. But I thought it was funny when I watched this the first time because I was like, okay, to me, you look Latino. Then I was like, oh, you're Filipino. But then I look at Savannah, and, like, she's a Southern belle, curly hair, like...
Yeah.
And I was like, this is so funny to me.
And, I mean, Steve, the guy who plays the older version, he's, like, Eastern Bloc European. Like,
wow.
He's not even a little bit, which is so... But we look so similar, too.
That's the great... I mean, that's a plus, I feel, when you're
I think it's a double-edged sword, though, when it comes to it, especially within this climate, just because it is...
touchy.
Yeah, it's kind of like a weird... It's a weird area, because people do want to have representation. Mm. And I find that being a halfer, you kind of do get left out of that a little bit, because you don't fit a box.
That's true.
You don't get to... And I always find it dangerous for that, because... Right now, more than ever, we're kind of leaning back and towards tokenism, where, like, a lot of these networks, for true diversity, they're trying to tick a box. They're trying to get a black person, one Latino person, one Asian person, mm-hmm. a white person, so everyone feels included.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how friend dynamics work.
That's
not how people
true.
in real life.
That's very
I think
true.
A really good representation is... have you seen the show, like, Sex Ed?
I love Sex
on
Ed.
On Netflix?
Yeah.
And I think they did a phenomenal job of just, like... I mean, obviously, they still have, like, a lot of white characters, but that's also very...
Predominantly white area.
Area. So yeah. It's, like, it's one of those things where it makes sense within the area.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like...
And they're not just trying to, like, be like, oh, yeah, this is anywhere America.
Yeah, one of the shows that I feel like people have said, like... The one show that I'm like, oh, see, now if they would remake this in modern day and age, they would have to go more diverse. It's like a Friends, like Friends. Like, the sitcom mm-hmm. Friends. Because, like, it's New York City. Like, you cannot get a more diverse area than New York City, but when you look at the background of the characters, from Long Island, from the suburbs, from this, it's like, okay, see, I kind of get it.
it kind of makes sense, where they're from. But it's one of those things where I don't think there needs to be any less of anything, per se. I think there just needs to be more of other things.
Right.
There's still room for casts that are completely all white because of the way that it is. If you're in... certain areas, 100%.
True,
like,
true.
That still makes sense to this day. But if something like, okay, if you have a film based in Japan, most of the cast should be Japanese because there aren't that many people.
That's true. But then my other thing is like, okay, so like the cast is predominantly white. But if the ethnicity doesn't matter, I think whoever comes in for the part and reads it the best, I think should get the part mm-hmm. regardless. And I think
so too. And I think that is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Unless your role has something to do with your race specifically.
Yeah.
Because there are times where, I mean, the story lends itself to being played by somebody of ethnic background.
Yeah. Like Little Mermaid. What do you think of that? Because like a lot of people were upset. Like they were just like, oh, I'm like. She's a mermaid. Who cares what she looks
I think
like?
It's one of those things because people do... Because I believe that The Little Mermaid is based on a Dutch story.
Yeah, like the
So it's like
old,
one of those
Dutch
things.
Story.
So people are like... Are very purist about that. Which I can understand because they're like...
Nostalgia.
Oh, they're trying to... But I also... I don't agree with it entirely.
Mm.
I think there is room to be able to change that. Because what makes it a little... That's that kind of base story.
Right. Yeah. And I love what the director of the movie said. He was just like, we saw a bunch of girls. We saw redheads. We saw blonde girls. We saw like black hair girls. We saw like Latina girls. She was the best out of who
but
we
saw. That's the thing. It's like, I don't think that The Little Mermaid necessarily has like a lot of Dutch history baked within it.
No, because she's a mermaid.
It's
she's a
pretty,
fish.
Yeah, it's pretty well a pretty universal kind of story. So
yeah,
I don't see why it doesn't necessarily need to be that.
Right.
I think people are just like very nostalgic about it and very close to it because they would have felt.
Yeah, no, that's
very connected to it.
That's when I think a lot of people have to separate the core material and whatever they're trying to make because they're two different entities. And I think it's your life. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you though. What ethnicity do you think I am?
That's like one of those things that I'm because you're definitely within that same mixed realm.
Mm-hmm.
I would guess that your lineage would come either from like northern East Africa to like Turkey area, but I'm not sure.
You're not far off. I'm like Caribbean and white.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you're not far off because like African, technically.
Yeah, I was kind of guessing within that.
Yeah.
Realm.
Yeah. No,
like
you're not far off.
Your Africa kind of area. Yeah.
See, some people say Hawaiian, and like I get it, but like
See, I would never get to Hawaiian because Hawaiians always look closer to how I look than...
That's true, that's true. But, like, people saw Lilo and Stitch and they're like, oh, me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, totally. Literally me. I have a question, though, that I wanted to ask you because you went out for Bobby on the show. What, like, if you saw, the entire show, right? Have you seen the entire show? What is another character that you're just like, oh, I would have loved to play that? That's a cool character to play.
That's always such a... Because, like, I mean, obviously... I would have loved to play any of the main three because that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I remember one of my friends, one of my good friends, Chris Carson, he went out for Caleb.
Oh, really?
He went out for Caleb. And I feel he's been on a couple of my lives and stuff like that.
Cool, cool,
but
cool.
He looks so much younger than Cheyenne. Like,
Cheyenne.
So much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
looks so much younger. So it's like one of those things where I know he wanted to play it so bad. And he would be a really cool character to play too. Mm-hmm. But I'm honestly, it's one of those things where I think everyone did a very good job either
way. The casting was amazing. The casting was really,
I think they did a really fantastic job either way. So I'm pretty happy with playing Bobby.
Yeah, but like, what if? Like,
what if?
Okay.
I think
Alex,
if I wanted...
Luke, or Reggie, who would you have been like, yeah, that's kind
of Reggie.
Cool. Reggie? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Reggie's a cool character to play.
Yeah, I would have loved to do that.
I think I would have gone for Alex.
Yeah?
Yeah, Alex is a cool character.
I was just like, I can't play drums at all.
Okay, yeah, true. But like the personality of the character is
very
like...
But it's so hard to see because I see him
Owen.
Do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's Owen who
and I'm
who
like,
can do it.
You are so much this.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, he is Alex.
His comedic timing is like impeccable on that. So I was like, I can't do that. There's no way.
Are you big on sitcom acting? I call it sitcom acting when the sarcasm is very...
I don't think I'm very good at it.
You don't?
No, I don't think I'm very good at it. There's a lot of timing stuff that I'm just like, I don't get what's going on here.
Me and life. Yep.
I was just like, I am so lost.
No, I feel that. I want to play the game.
Are you? Are you a fan of it?
Sitcom? I love sitcom acting. I have some stuff in the works right now for sitcom acting, so I can't.
Oh, awesome.
I can't.
You can't let it. Yeah, don't let it go. Don't
but,
let it go. That's fine.
No, I love sitcom acting. I think because my first language is French-Canadian, it took me a really long time, because I think with sitcom acting, you need to talk really fast in some parts, and like sometimes I read scripts and I'm like, huh? My mouth doesn't do that. Like, but no, sitcom acting is like so much fun, and I think it's like, a sitcom job is a sweet gig because typically it's like a pretty much like a 9-to-5 job. Like, you go to set every day. It's in this controlled environment. You don't go on location a lot. It's pretty much like in this little like
you're in a studio. Yeah.
You have your little green room, little like dressing room, all that stuff. You see the same people every day, same people making your food every day. It's like I think it's like a very comfy and it's a very
gig. Cushy acting job. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Which I'm down for, if I'm being honest.
There's so few times as an artist that you get stability.
True.
That it is kind of nice to be able to be like, yeah, this is kind of cool right now.
Yeah. 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 And like, you do music, you do gigs and like clubs and stuff. I saw like you did a little jazz moment. I think I saw on your Instagram.
I mean, I've played, I haven't played live that much. It's one of those things where, I mean, because my main thing that I play would be jazz piano.
Wow.
So that's also like not a thing that you can really just jump into.
True.
So because you need to be able to play with these people, and unless you're really good at improvisation, which I'm okay.
Jazz is a lot of improv though, right?
Yeah, there's a like way I don't know how much I have the chops to do it within that way. I understand like music theory and all that kind of stuff, but
You should
it's
come
a different
to
vibe entirely.
You should come to the jazz festival in Montreal because, like, it's one of the...
If you
love jazz, like, my grandpa's a jazz band player. It's a really good time where you, like... He teaches me... And even, like, La La Land. I don't know if you saw La La Land. But in that movie, they explain jazz in a way that... Jazz never sounded exciting to me before that movie. So now I'm kind of like, oh, like, jazz has a reason to be. And I think it's fun that, like... You know, when I see you, I wouldn't think jazz. Like, I would think, maybe, like, a little pop, R&B, a little bit of that.
It's, like, really based in... Yeah, I think it's kind of the basis to a lot of modern music anyways that I really do enjoy.
Mm-hmm. True.
So, it's actually, like, on the EP, I have one that's written entirely within a bossa nova style, which is a Portuguese style that's mainly been like mainly got into popularity like late 50s, early 60s, which that's like one of my biggest inspirations for a lot of my music too, just because it's minimal but also feels big and also feels intimate and very. And then I feel like it has a lot of like elements of how modern R&B are.
No, that's true. That's very true. Now, I want to hear you more. You sing more because I went on a deep dive on your TikTok and I was just like, you know when like it's 2 a.m. and you just scroll and like you scroll and you watch like everybody's videos. That's kind of how that was for me with your profile. And you have an insane voice, which is like very like you sing Daniel Caesar very well, but it's very like intimate, almost like sultry. But then you get into like more grungy stuff too, which I really like. So I want to hear you sing more.
I would love to sing more. Yeah, it's I have a really just I've added a lot of distortion to my voice throughout the years. Because I can sing pretty clean, but because you have to do it for musical theater.
True. But
when I sing my own stuff, I'll add distortion to it.
A little texture. A little
texture. I think it's fun. I think it adds a little bit of, especially for things like grunge, it really adds to it. So.
For sure. No, I love that you said that because on TikTok there's a video of that theater kid girl that decides to sing Driver's License and like sings it like so theatrically.
I got my driver's license.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like so wispy and so
yeah. Like so whimsical, and I'm like, girl, you're doing too much. You're doing too much.
It's like you gotta
chill out.
Cut the cameras. Come on.
But I wanna play I'm big on theater. I'm a big theater kid, and I did a game with Owen, theater kid style. And I wanted to do a theater kid game also with Madison, but I got copyright striked. But now I reached out to the record labels and they said it's cool. It should be good now. So Owen did terribly. Okay. But I want to hear you sing the exact same songs that we did on that game. And we'll compare how you perform against Owen. Oh, but there's like, it's like not too much. So like I'll sing a part of the song because I'm not allowed to play the song. It's like a cappella. Mm-hmm. And then you complete the song. And like, don't worry.
Oh my God.
Cult classics. All right.
I feel like I'm gonna do bad now because I'm like overthinking it, but it's fine.
No. Don't overthink it. It's gonna be good. Okay. So like, on the outside, always looking in, will I
ever be more than I've always been? Cause I'm tapping on the glass. I'm waving through a window.
Yes, dear Evan Hansen. Come on.
I actually went out for the Canadian tour of that.
Oh, dude, that would have been so cool.
Yeah, I got a couple of callbacks for it. I was pretty close to doing why am I blanking on the name?
Evan?
Not Evan. the one who kills himself.
I don't want to spoil it for people. Watch it. See it. Go see it. But that would have been so cool though.
Mm-hmm.
See? This is better. This is singing on a podcast, the song.
That's fine. Yeah, it's way better.
Okay, this one is not a musical theater song, but it definitely is a musical song. So, and at last I see the light, and it's like the fog has lifted.
What is... Oh my God, I know the song, but...
So it's like what from is that? Zachary Levi sang that with Mandy Moore in Tangled.
Oh, I've actually never seen Tangled.
See, it's okay. You're an adult. You don't need to see Tangled.
Okay. You don't need to see Tangled. There's a lot of like old Disney and like those kind of movies that I've never seen just because I just never watched them anyways.
So you're not a Disney kid?
No, I watched a lot of Disney, but like 90s Disney. I didn't watch a lot of like 2000s Disney.
What's 90s Disney? Oh, well,
like,
I get it.
I mean like Little Mermaid, like Lion King, like Aladdin, like
cult Hercules. Classics. The music in that and Tarzan is unmatched. Anyways, I'm getting carried away. All right, well, we'll start with the dear Evan Hansen route. Like, when you always look around, you will be found. And when the world's just streaming in, you'll reach out and you rise again.
I know this is found. I know the song, but I don't know the song.
You will be found. I mean,
yeah.
I didn't sing that one to Owen because, like, the way he reacted to some of those other songs I sang, I was just like, "Do you know Dear Evan Hansen?" He's like, "Yeah, it's one of my favorites." And I was just like, "Really?" Like, you didn't know those songs, so I didn't get to sing that one. But yeah, that's "You Will Be Found" by Dear Evan Hansen. All right, this one, if you've seen La La Land, "City of Stars, Are You Shining Just for Me?"
City of Stars, and then I don't know the lyrics, but I know the tune.
That's such a good song. Your voice would be really good with that song.
I actually, when that came out, it was like one of those ones that it was very, wow, it hit me right in the heartstrings, because it was a very, it's very real, I think, as a as an artist anyways, you know?
It's true, especially if you're in, like, I don't know, that movie is just, I think, a love letter to everybody who goes after what they dream for and feel like they're not succeeding at the rate that they wish that they could. So I could totally see that you felt like yeah. when I watched it the first time, I was just like, pretty, but like when I watched it back after, I was like, oh no, like the lyrics, everything is
yeah,
so
I watched
well
it a couple
out.
Times in theaters, actually. I think that was one of the few movies within that year that I watched multiple times. So
see, really great movie. All right, not Dear Evan Hansen again. I don't think you'll know this one, but we'll try it again. If I could tell her everything I see.
If I could tell her that she's everything to me.
Hey! See?
Yeah, that's a good duet. I like that. That's a good duet.
I love that, like little anxious, like, she mm-hmm. said, like, it's like that little.
Because
like,
I did that on TikTok. I did that.
Really? That oh, yeah, I need to go see
I did
that.
A duet. I did a duet of that song on TikTok, but.
Oh my god. Yeah, like he said. Honestly, Jordan Fisher was such a great Evan.
Oh yeah, great choice.
Well, for every part, that man can mm-hmm. take every part. But yeah, he was amazing in that. All right. This one is, again, from a musical, but not from a musical theater production.
Okay.
All the lights in a thousand spotlights. All the stars were still from the night sky.
This is Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
Which I know that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't.
Know the lyrics?
Know it, because I didn't love it.
You didn't love it?
I didn't love it. But also because at that point when I first watched it, because they also wrote the music for Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
But at that time, because they have a very specific style of writing that I wasn't like jiving with at the time, and I was like, this feels weird and I don't know why.
Really?
And so it's like one of those things where I was like, I don't know why I don't like this, but I don't. Well, I mean, I like it, but it's like, it's never my first choice.
It's not
choice.
For me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate what it does, but it's
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah.
I think also because at that point I was so deep with Alan Menken, because he's like one of my favorite composers and writers, because obviously it connects very heavily with Disney stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But.
I think there's if you don't like the storyline or whatever, because it is a very, like, to me it's very Disney, even though it's not, it does feel very
Disney.
it's very
different, but
yeah, yeah.
I watched it, but I didn't learn any of the songs or anything like that.
Wow, no, the songs are one of my favorite parts, like Never Enough, I think. But then again, it bummed me out that the actress didn't actually sing it. It was dubbed. I was like, okay. Anyway, so, well, do you know any songs from Julie and the Phantoms that you found yourself to love a lot that you can, like, sing us a little part of?
I always feel like I butcher them when I do it, and that's the thing. Like, I actually want to release a cover.
You should.
Of one of them.
You should.
But I haven't done it yet, because it's a weird place for me to do it, just because it's like. When you're acting on the show, it's weird singing somebody else's song.
That's true. But then again, I'm often on FaceTime with, like, Tori or Sav or whatever, and they sing, each, like,
maybe,
Dirty Candy.
Maybe that's just, like,
and...
the musical theater thing, though. It could just be, like,
oh,
yeah.
Doing
that. Because,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I remember doing, when you have leads and stuff, and you have other people singing your song, maybe because it feels like competition. It's, like, one of those weird things, but... I don't know. It might just be a hang-up that I have.
You're too deep-rooted in that theater kid realm.
Yeah, and it's
like
this whole thing where you're like, if you didn't book that, then it's like, it's almost like... Because I remember doing musical theater all the time, and there's always that one song that people would sing in the locker room and, like, the change rooms and stuff like that.
And then you're like...
But like, well, I mean, that's okay, but usually those are, like, assemble songs, and, like, every musical has one. But...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, then there's, like, the ones that are, like, the solo songs that are really beautiful, but it's like, if you sing them, it feels weird because it's like also not your song.
That's crazy. I would have never thought of it. No, I see now. Yeah. I need to delete my cover that I posted. I need to delete.
No, don't do it. I'm sure it's beautiful.
It's
but I have been debating doing it, like, because people keep on asking me to do Unsaid Emily, and I think that's a really beautiful song.
That's what I did.
And I love Emily, and I've seen people do, like, swaps for the vocals of mine, and I'm like, oh, do I do that? Because
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
I could. But I wouldn't want to just do a cover of the original because like as Luke's song,
it's very personal to Luke.
It's a very personal song. Yeah. So it's really hard for me to like take that from Charlie. It feels
That's
weird.
That's
true. To me.
And he did a great job. What I did with it, I was deep into quarantine. Oof, it was getting to my head. I had the time on my hands to translate the song to French.
Oh, did you?
So I was like, okay, let me like record that. And I did like this cringy little video for it. Like, oh my God, it was awful. But see, like I kind of made it my own for a bit. And then I was flattered because Tori was like, oh, like we listened to it while we're in the car on our way to Big Bear with Charlie. He was like, oh, I really liked what he did with it. And I was like, oh, see, now that's the best, like, that's the best praise you can ever get. But like, if you ever come around to doing it, I think a lot of people would be excited for it because I think you could
I might release.
What do you mean with that texture, like that, like grunge to it, that like emotion to it, and bring a new vibe to it that I think could be really, really beautiful.
Maybe I'll do something on TikTok. We'll see.
And I will be liking that TikTok and sharing. See, doing God's work. So you also worked on Riverdale, which I love because when I visited Vancouver, I know a person that works on Riverdale, and I was like, can I come visit the set? Because like I'm like a big fan of the actors that are on it, and I love the Archie comic books. How was that experience for you? You played Lugnut, I believe.
Lugnut.
And like, did you get to like, I don't know, like that's such a cool thing. Because like Riverdale, I think, is like now like a very core pop culture classic show. Everybody knows it. Some people are haters of it. Some people love it. How was that experience doing it?
I think when you book on Riverdale, it's kind of like, it's cool. It's like, oh, cool, I'm doing a show that a lot of people, because I remember I would get, when I did it, I got like a lot of messages from people from small towns that I lived in, because they're like, oh yeah, you got on Riverdale, that's Riverdale. So cool. And I'm like, I haven't talked to you in 10 years.
Like, I don't get people coming.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Been a fool. But, which is fine, but I thought it was really cool. They were long days. They were really long days on set. But they're really streamlined. That's the thing. I think with how the Riverdale set runs, it's very like you're there for a really long time, but they're trying to get everything. Mm-hmm. I think working on Riverdale, while great, it can also, it's very turbulent as far as a set goes, because, I was working with Gina Gershon on that. And I remember she had a thing where they do it a lot actually on the show where they'll just rewrite it and the writers will hand you a new script
that's a very sitcom like too, because like they do rewrites and they're like, yeah, this is now your script.
And that was the thing, I remember watching Gina having to re-memorize her entire lines, and it's one of those things that are very, it's very humbling as an actor to realize how much you have to do that.
It is
realistically, because you can't have anything solid in acting, which is interesting because we have all these very specific lines that they want us to deliver very specifically.
Yeah.
But also, you can't actually have them memorized anymore. It's weird.
That's because you're not
like, you don't. That's one of those things that I've noticed with film and TV, that I just don't memorize lines anymore. Like I have a script that I have to do pretty much right after this for a show, and then, I don't have it memorized, but I'm gonna have to tape it anyways. So we're gonna have to see where that goes.
The pilot season, man. Wow, what a good time.
And that's the thing, it's one of those things, and I thought Riverdale taught me a lot from that perspective, and especially like long days, and also seeing like how they work on that show, just because it is, they work like sitcom life where it's, they're there 5 days a week, they're doing it.
Well, they have a lot of in studio a lot, but when you watch the show, it's a lot of nighttime shoots. Whole lot of nighttime shoots, which
it's mostly nighttime. Like we shot from, I was there, I think my first day I got there like 7-8 a.m. and I left at like 3 or 4 in the morning. Yeah.
Okay.
Long day. So you shot the entire day, and then when the sun went down, you had a whole other side of things to shoot.
Yeah. Did you get to meet any of like the core, like?
I met KJ and Cole.
Cool.
And then I already know like Drew and Jordan just from life anyway. So
cool. No, I love Riverdale. I think it's one of those shows that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, like they're going on 5 seasons, 6 seasons. Like, why, you know, the show lended itself to what it is. But I'm like, as long as the actors are still in it and like the writers are still coming up with stuff that they feel happy with and they're proud of,
yeah,
why not? You know what I mean?
I mean, I think there's a space for that. It's one of those things. Those things where you're, if they're, people are still watching it, why not too?
Exactly.
And people are still enjoying it.
Most important part, I think, is the actors. Cause I think after like doing like 6 years, they're going on their sixth season. So they did maybe like 6-7 years of Riverdale.
Mm.
It's like you, as long as the actors are still in it, because I feel like you can totally sense it when an actor is totally over it. You know what I mean? Like in the last seasons, they're just like,
yeah.
Huh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, no, that's dope that you did that. Now, we got to wrap it up because, like, we could talk for hours. But
yeah.
One of the things that I really want to know. So, anime. Okay? Anime is something that you're really passionate about. I tried it, all right, in high school. My friends were very much the anime girls who loved BTS and all that stuff. They still do.
Totally.
Blackpink, all that.
In your area.
I had friends that liked that. I was never... the one that, like, I tried Naruto. I really did. And, like, it just came to a point where I was lost and confused. So, like, how do you think somebody should get their anime virginity taken? What shows should they watch?
So, like, I've never really watched Naruto just because...
Really?
I'm not into that style of anime, though.
Okay.
Which is totally fine. I think there's... That's a tough one. A really good starting one, depending on like what you like. Mm-hmm. Like if you like really sad ones, okay.
There's some that depressing are depressing enough, so maybe not. But yeah.
But sometimes they're like really nice because it's something to cry to, you know.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Wow.
It's a really hard one just because it's really heartbreaking. But Your Lie in April is really good. That's on Netflix.
Ooh. Okay.
I mean, my favorite anime ever is called Kids on the Slope in American, but it's Sakamichi no Rapunon, which is like, it's phenomenal. It's like about jazz in the 50s, but it's very like, it's very specific to a type, so it's not really a good starter anime.
What's that word you just said? Because what's that word you just said? Like you were speaking a language that I was like, I have no idea what you're saying, but I'm living
speaking
for
Japanese.
Okay.
Yeah, Sakamichi no Rapunon, which is
yeah, sure.
And then
yeah
Toradora is really good as like a romance anime. I think it has like one of the best like love triangles.
Ooh, okay.
I really love depressing animes, but that's just me.
I love that for you, I guess.
Yeah.
You're giving me a whole library. I'm like writing this down. I'm like, okay, let me watch this.
Food Wars, but you have to watch it with not like people around, I find, unless they're like they're in on it, because there's a lot of weird things that are just anime tropes that you're like, oh, fuck, this is uncomfortable.
I love that you love anime, though, because I think when a lot of people think about anime, they think Pikachu, Pokemon, and they think of Naruto.
I think that's changing a little bit, too, because I think it is a really good... yeah, I mean, there's...
Well, it's time to wrap up this interview. I hope everybody at home feels like I made a friend out of Taylor today. I feel like I made a friend out of Taylor. That's the point.
Yeah, you're great.
We got this merch. It's out now. It's called We're Best Friends Right Now. Taylor, I'll send you one if you want me to.
I would love one.
It's really cute, you know? It's like a...
It looks really comfy, too.
It's really... I just got mine today after started sending me pictures of theirs that they got, like a week ago or so. And I was like, oh, man, this is my merch, and I still got it. So I got it today. I'll send you one for sure. Before we go, I always ask my guests if they have 3 songs that everybody should have on their driving playlist right now, what song would that be?
Let me pull up my Spotify, because this is really hard to...
Please do.
On the spot. Driving's... Okay. So Into You by Tamia.
Okay.
That's a great one. For late night driving, Backseat Driving by Q.
Backseat Driving. What's the vibe?
Yeah. It's like really... It's really chill. Like it's very... Like it almost has like...
Vibe-y.
Blonde Frank Ocean-y vibes.
Yeah.
But it's like he's an underground R&B artist. He's just like up and coming. He's really good though.
Okay. I like that.
Toy Story by Louse the Cat.
Toy Story?
Yeah, never by Louse the Cat.
I can't wait to
like
add it to the playlist.
He is a UK like underground rapper.
Yeah.
But the vibes are just like they're good.
Oh, yeah. See?
A lot of these are just like really chill. They're not like road trip vibes, but I mean, who's driving in a road trip right now? We're in a Panorama or whatever, right?
We're in a Pangea. Yeah, no, it's just like I think road trip vibes, there's 2 vibes, you know? There's the vibes like arm out the windows, that thing.
And nothing like, wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with I like that. But it's like also him. Like that vibey tone where it's like nighttime, mm-hmm. you know, a little more like vibey, chill, relax. So see, mm-hmm. now you guys got three songs to listen to that we'll add to the Sunset Drive playlist. All right, well, this has been our episode for today, which was a really great episode. I'm Anthony Smith.
I'm Taylor Carre.
And this has been Sunset Drive. That's a cute cat, though. Look at that cat.